afternoon. I'm calling the Senate Judiciary Committee to order. Today's Friday, April 5th. Let the record reflect the time is 1:34. Today we have present Senator Michicki, Senator Schauer, Senator Keel, and myself, Chair Hughes. Senator Reinbold is excused. I'd like to remind committee members to please turn off or silence your cell phones. Thank you this Friday for Nancy Hemingway, Eileen Keim, and Buddy Witt for being of assistance to us today. We have one item on the agenda. We'll introduce the new working document for Senate Bill 35, Crimes, Sex Crimes, Sentencing, Parole. This is one of the governor's bills. We'll be taking, walk through an explanation of changes and take committee member questions. And once the document's been adopted, we'll consider three amendments that are technical in nature. It's my intention to hold the bill until Monday so that Vice Chair Senator Reinbold will have an opportunity to speak to the bill prior to moving it out of committee, and I will also be holding public testimony on Monday afternoon. I'd like to ask committee members to keep your questions focused on the item, and concise questions are appreciated. Senator Michicki, may I have a motion, please?
Yes, Madam Chair. I move committee substitute for Senate Bill 35, Work Order 31-GS1873/K to be adopted as the working document.
Thank you, and I'll object for explanation of changes in discussion. I'd like to invite our committee aide, Mr. Buddy Witt, to the table. As he makes his way to the table, I'd like to inform members that the following individuals are either online or in the room and available for questions. So online, we have Mr. John Skidmore, the Director of the Criminal Division for the Department of Law, as well as Ms. Regina Largent, my staff attorney. In the room is Ms. Casey Schroeder, Assistant Attorney General for the Department of Law, and Ms. Natalie Nordberg, Director of the Offices of Children's Services for the Department of Health and Social Services. Mr. Witt, please place your name on the record and explain the changes in the committee substitute.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Buddy Witt, staff of Senator Hughes. The following is explanation of changes for version U to version K. As we go through this explanation of changes, I'll note to committee members the items that were added via amendment the last time the bill was in committee. First of all, I would like to point out to committee members the following changes to the title as a result of changes made to the provisions of the bill. We added relating to sexual assault, relating to unlawful exploitation of a minor, relating to definitions of sexual felony, sex offense, and sex offender. The first section, section one, deals with legislative findings and intent language, and there was one piece that was added. You'll find this addition on page 7, lines 7 and 8. This adds intent language for the Department of Public Safety to make additional resources available to expand investigation of online exploitation of children. This was formally going to be an amendment by several members. However, seeing additional changes that were needed in the previous CS, it decided to go ahead and include it in this CS. Madam Chair, I'd like to invite Senator Keel to speak to this change and also Senator Michicki to speak to the finance portion of this change. This was an idea from yourself and Senator Keel and Senator Michicki.
And before you do that, I may have misunderstood, but you might have said page 7 is actually on page 3, line 7. And I also want to let members know that Sergeant Dunford with the Department of Public Safety is also on the line and available for question. And Nancy Mead is also here if anything comes up involving the courts. Senator Keel.
Well, thank you, Madam Chair. As our offices were working on some of the exploitation of children, the child pornography, if you will, sections and laws looking into it, got a lot of help from the Department of Public Safety, but we were all, I think, equally surprised to learn that the state doesn't currently have resources dedicated directly to going out and actively finding folks who are producing or posting this exploitive content online. When reports come in, when somebody's fixing a computer and finds something horrifying, when an internet service provider red flags something, Alaska investigates. But was very surprised to learn that we don't currently have the resources dedicated to going out and looking. And I just wanted to take a second to applaud the Department of Public Safety. It's working with local law enforcement through a multi-agency online crimes against children task force, the name of which I probably have wrong. But I think this intent language that we try and do whatever we need to do to get out and find the resources to actively, proactively go looking is really worthwhile. So thank you for including that. Obviously, there's a budgetary impact, and we've had some preliminary conversations with Senator Machicki.
Thank you, Senator Keel. Senator Machicki.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I appreciate you including this amendment. We are evaluating what that kind of position or those resources would cost, and I plan to insert them in the DPS budget on the Senate side, hopefully get it across the finish line. But I'll be visiting with DPS more and the commissioner to just get a better idea of what that resource looks like, where they may be housed, how they're going to operate, so that we can have the proper language in the DPS budget.
Thank you, Senator Machicki. And those listening can't see this, but there is a those that are watching or in the room can see there's a publication from the Department, U.S. Department of Justice, Child Pornography on the Internet. And we also had meetings with Department of Public Safety and learned all about, well, not all about, some about the dark web and how it takes a special skill level to be able to pinpoint these kind of things. And I do believe that I spoke on the Senate floor, too, that much of the changes that we're going to go over today are going to involve toughening penalties involving sexual crimes where the victims are children. So this, of course, is proactively investigating the what's happening on that dark web. So I appreciate the amendment, and we want to let all the pedophiles in our nation, around the world, know that they are not welcome in Alaska. Senator Machicki?
Madam Chair, I think you were the one who told me that child pornography is not illegal in, I think you said, 55 countries around the world. So this is obviously a larger effort. Whenever there's a market, there will be someone who provides that product. So I think we have a lot of work to do, but certainly what we're working on 35 will help identify perpetrators in a place where it is illegal. So thanks for the work on that.
And thank you, for Senator Keel, for raising it. So I think I'm actually, Sergeant Dunford is online. And Sergeant, would you like to speak on this matter at all, just as it does involve the Department of Public Safety?
This is Sergeant Dunford with the Alaska State Troopers. I am the, through the chair. This is Sergeant Dunford with the Alaska State Troopers. I am the Sergeant Supervisor of the Technical Crimes Unit, which contains currently four Internet Crimes Against Children Task Force investigators, one computer forensic examiner civilian, one mobile forensic examiner civilian. I'm also the supervisor for the Financial Crimes Unit.
And do you feel if a and this is more at the Finance Committee table, but if this were added, do you feel like this person would be able to be kept busy? Is there traffic out there that we should be concerned about?
Through the chair, this morning I pulled the last 30 days of activity on one of the networks that we monitor. There are 42 independent IP addresses that are actively that contain images of sexually exploited children within the past 30 days.
And that is in Alaska?
Yes, ma'am.
Okay, thank you. I guess it confirms the importance of this. Continue, Mr. Witt.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Continuing to Section 2. Section 2 and Section 3, I'd like to speak together because they are the same concept. And Section 2 revises the mental state for sexual assault in the second degree, and Section 3 revises the mental state for sexual assault in the third degree. Sexual assault in the second degree engages in penetration with someone who is mentally incapable, incapacitated, or unaware that a sexual act is being committed. What this, Section 3 is sexual contact. with someone who is mentally incapable, incapacitated, or unaware that a sexual act is being committed. This concept was brought forward by Vice Chair Senator Reinbolt. The concept is to remove the language that says the offender knows. In other words, Madam Chair and members, from now on, there is no excuse of whether or not the offender knows that their victim is mentally incapable, incapacitated, or unaware that a sexual assault is being committed. It is simply the crime has been committed regardless of that mental state.
Okay, thank you.
Section 3 starts at the bottom of page 3 and continues into page 4. Section 3 amends AS 1141-425A, excuse me, section...
I believe you're on section 4.
Section 6, pardon me.
No, we're on section...
We're doing explanation of change, Madam
Chair. Sorry.
The next
go ahead.
Change is in section 6. Section 6 added a section which amends AS 1141-438B, adding that the crime of sexual abuse of a minor in the third degree is a Class C felony punishable under AS 1255-125E when the offense occurs outside the provisions of Section C of this section. So, again, Section 6 and Section 7 go along together. I'm going to read what Section 7 does and try to explain how the two go together. Section 7 amends 1141-438, adds AS 1141-438C that sexual abuse of a minor is a Class C felony punishable under AS 1255-125I if the victim is at least 6 years younger than the offender. Madam Chair, this takes us back to the previous time we considered the bill, and the discussion was had about differences in ages and how that affects the criminal charges. And these two sections together try to clarify that. What these two sections basically do is it provides that basically if there are two sentencing provisions, if the crime is happens, period, it's a Class C felony, and there are sentencing provisions for that crime. However, if the crime happens and the age difference is 6 years or more, then there is a stiffer penalty for that crime.
Okay. Senator Schauer.
Thank you, Madam Chair. This one came up. We had a long discussion about this one before. I know there were some answers. We might have to get law up here or somebody else to talk about it, but we went back to this, and I've forgotten the cutoff at this point, which is why I'm asking, because you do the math, and you go, so an 18-year-old could have sex with a 12-year-old, and everybody goes, that doesn't sound right. And we had this whole circular discussion around this, and is that where we still are, or am I missing what changed or the other applicable parts of the law when you read the whole statute? Because I think, obviously, us sitting here as parents and adults are going, yeah, 18-year-old, that's an actual adult. Having sex with a 12-year-old is not acceptable. So where's the cutoff, and what am I missing here? And that's why I ask it kind of on that 30,000-foot view.
I'm going to ask Mr. Skidmore if he'd identify himself for the record and respond to that question, please.
Good afternoon, members of the committee. This is John Skidmore. I'm the director of the Criminal Division for the State of Alaska Department of Law. Through the chair, Senator Schauer, the answer to your question is the law says for sexual abuse of a minor in the third degree that a victim is 13, 14, or 15, and there is a four-year age difference between the victim and the offender. So that remains the law, and what the sections that Mr. Witt was just testifying to do is they say that if the age difference is not merely a four-year age difference, but is actually a six-year age difference, then the penalty can be greater. But the threshold for legality is victim of 13, 14, or 15, and a four-year age difference.
So, Mr. Skidmore, the 18-year-old with a 12-year-old, basically this would be a stiffer penalty then, is that correct?
So remember, the victim has to be 13, 14, or 15. If the victim is 12, it's actually not sexual abuse of a minor in the third degree. That's actually sexual abuse of a minor in the second degree, which, yes, carries a greater penalty, but that's not within the statute that the bill is addressing at the moment.
Senator Schauer, does that clear things for you?
I think it does. There was a very long discussion about this, and it was just the math again, and I could not remember how it tied together, because that was, you do the math, you go, well, that's clearly not good. But the, that's, so I think it's answered the question. Was there another gotcha that we had that long discussion? Any of the other math there? I think that was pretty much the end of it, wasn't it? Kind of looking towards the back of the room. But.
Senator Machicki?
Well, there was one. So the 15, is that technically the age of consent in the state of Alaska? Is that why the 18 to 15 does not cross over into a higher crime?
Mr. Skidmore?
Through the chair, Senator Machicki, the answer to that is no. The age of consent is not 15. The age of consent is 16, and that's actually also found in some other statutes where it says if the victim is under the age of 16. But what our statutes do, and I apologize, this is somewhat confusing to explain over the phone, but what our statutes do is they break the victims into a couple of different groups. And it starts with victims under the age of 12. Those have the most serious penalties. It then groups victims between the age of 13 through 15, so up to the age of 16. And those individuals have a, those victims, if someone perpetrates against them, there is a slightly lower penalty so long as the age range is appropriate between the victim and the offender. But the age of consent ultimately is the age of 16. So I hope that's responsive to your question. Perhaps one of these days I'll put together a chart that tries to lay it all out for everyone.
Senator Machicki, is that?
The chart would be very helpful. I mean, I realize that it's still a crime for the 18-year-old and 15-year-old because it, well, is sexual abuse of a minor. Is that correct? It's just the three-year spread makes it more serious than it would be for an 18-year-old and a 17-year-old.
So through the chair, Senator Machicki, if you have an 18-year-old and a 17-year-old, that is not a sexual abuse of minor. That is above the age of consent. So it would have to be evaluated for whether or not that activity was without consent. It's under the age of 16. So if you had an 18-year-old and a 16-year-old, that is not what we refer to as sexual abuse of a minor or statutory rape, where the victim cannot give consent. That age range is too close. You have to have at least a four-year age difference for these statutes to kick in. Otherwise, you're analyzing it under sexual assault statutes, which are a different set of statutes that still talk about sexual activity.
Yes.
Senator Machicki?
Thank you, Mr. Skidmore. Then let me just ask one final question. Is there a difference between an 18-year-old and a 15-year-old versus a 17-year-old and a 14-year-old, since the 18-year-old would be an adult?
So I'm sorry, I need to write those ages down again, Senator Machicki. Can I ask you to repeat them, please?
Right. So is there a difference in the charge? And I'm kind of talking across the gamut. If it's an 18-year-old perpetrator and a 15-year-old versus a 17-year-old and a 14-year-old, since we're talking about a three-year split, but the difference with the 15-year-old and the 18-year-old is the 18-year-old is actually an adult.
Okay. So there are two provisions. Through the chair, Senator Machicki, there are two provisions of law that come into play. First, the 18-year-old and the 15-year-old or the 17-year-old and the 14-year-old is only a three-year age difference, not a four-year age difference that sexual abuse of minor requires. But if you simply increase that age slightly, if you want to make it the 4 years, and so if I can, if I make it a 13-year-old and a 17-year-old and a 18-year-old with a 14-year-old, so you have the 4 year age difference, then the answer to your question has to deal with whether or not juveniles are charged in adult court. And the answer to that question is it's not an automatic waiver unless it is a unclassified or a Class A offense. And that determination would be made with these statutes about whether or not there is penetration versus sexual contact, and I'm just looking at the statutes briefly. I actually think they would be treated, the 18-year-old would be treated as an adult because they're over the age of 18. The 17-year-old would be treated as a juvenile because sexual abuse of a minor is a Class B felony, so it would not fall under the automatic waiver. So there would be a difference in the way in which those individuals were treated.
Thank you. Senator Keel has a question.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I was tracking until Mr. Skidmore said B felony. I thought that that sexual abuse of a minor that he was describing in the senator's hypothetical was a C felony. Where did I go wrong?
Through the chair, Senator Keel, the difference between whether or not it is a C felony or a B felony is the difference between whether or not it is sexual contact versus sexual penetration. Sexual contact is a C felony, sexual abuse of a minor that we're talking about, but that distinction of whether it was contact versus penetration was not clear, and so I was trying to be cautious in my answer because there is penetration that can occur that can be a B felony as opposed to the C.
Senator Keel?
Thank you, Madam Chair. So then to come back to the proposed change in the bill, we're talking about third degree, so I think we're talking about contact, and I want to make sure that I'm understanding whether we're talking about, and if I'm understanding correctly, this one is not a forcible crime. This is a situation where we say the age range is too great for consent to be allowable. Am I correct there?
Through the chair, Senator Keel, you are correct. We are talking about when the victim is not of an age to consent. That is correct.
So the last follow-up on this one?
Senator Keel?
Thank you. So then to go to Section 7, our six-year age gap will carry the stiffer penalty, and I want to make sure that I understand what that is. Does that include registration as a sex offender?
Through the chair, Senator Keel, the answer to that question is yes. It would require sex offender registration.
Okay, so Madam Chair, that's
Senator Keel.
That I think is maybe the biggest piece of what we're doing here, because we're talking about contact and we're talking about consent in fact, but not by law. And so I just want to make sure my head's clear on that. I given the age ranges, I'm not objecting to that. I'm just sometimes I need Mr. Skidmore's chart, and I haven't built it in my head yet.
Mm-hmm. Yes, we a chart would be nice, perhaps, too, as this bill moves forward out of committee. All right, continue, Mr. Witt.
Moving on to Section 11 is the next section where there's changes. Section 11 amends AS 1141-455C and increasing the criminal classification for unlawful exploitation of a minor. A current statute says that the first offense of unlawful exploitation of a minor, the first offense is a Class B felony. The second offense, currently in statute, is a Class A felony. What this section simply does is state that the first offense of unlawful exploitation of a minor is a Class A felony. It also states that the first offense of unlawful exploitation of a minor can be an unclassified felony if the minor who is being exploited is under the age of 13.
Mr. Witt, it's not it can be, it is an unclassified if it's 12 years or under.
If I said can be, I apologize.
Just want to make that clear.
If the first offense is with a minor who is under the age of 13, it is a unclassified felony.
Thank you for the clarification.
And any time that there is a second offense, it is also an unclassified felony.
Senator Schauer.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Can you just confirm jurisdiction means not just within the state, but back to that question of data that came from out of the state. Does that include it in this definition for our statutes now? Is that has that been closed, if you will? So if they were convicted, I guess that's what I'm asking. How does that pulled in from unlawful exploitation of a minor if it was if they have an offense in a different state?
Through the chair, Senator Schauer, actually, that is addressed in Section 22 of the CS, and we'll be covering that shortly.
Thank you.
And I just want to mention here, as we're toughening up these sentences, and unclassified is very serious, but in our research about other states, this is not particular to unlawful exploitation of a minor. It's worse, but in Oklahoma, just as a comparison in general, as far as for children under age of 14 convicted for any offense of forcible anal or oral sodomy, rape by instrumentation, or lewd molestation of a child under 14 years of age shall be punished by death or by imprisonment for life without parole. So I just point that out. If anybody's hesitating, we're moving this to a tougher sentence. They're going to be in a jail a long time. I believe they do need a longer sentence, and we do need to be tough. And so I just pointed that out for the record. That was something we came across as we were studying what's happening in other states and regarding sexual crimes involving children. Continue, Mr. Witt.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I would add also that this particular portion would have been added by amendment had we gotten to it before, but it was also an idea of several members. I believe Senator Reinbold actually brought that idea to us as well. Section 12 is the next change. This deals with indecent exposure in the first degree. Section 12 amends AS 1141-458B, which clarifies that indecent exposure in the first degree is a Class B felony when the offense occurs in the view of a minor, that is, someone under the age of 16.
Senator Keel?
And Madam Chair, I just want to get clear on this one. Let's see. This indecent exposure in the first degree, so... this is not my favorite topic. We've done this a bunch. I apologize. This change at lines 20 and 21 would be would this be a second offense to hit the B felony, or would it just it would not be a, would it be the first offense in the view of a 15-year-old?
I'm going to read my notes, and if Mr. Skidmore wants to correct anything, but my notes are what this section does. If there's a violation in the second degree plus masturbation and the victim is 16 years or older, it would be a Class C felony. If there's a violation in the second degree plus masturbation and the victim is 15 years or younger, then it becomes a Class B. If there's a violation in the second degree and there's a prior conviction and the victim is 16 years or older, it will be a Class C. If there's a violation in the second degree and a prior conviction and the victim is 15 years or younger, it will be a Class B. And Mr. Skidmore, does that, did I get it right?
This is John Skidmore to the chair. I believe you did get that correct. The answer is it can be a Class B felony. The C or the B depends upon the age of the victim, but indecent exposure in the first degree is dependent upon one of two factors, either A, that the masturbation has occurred, or B, that it is a second offense. So it's one or the other, and then to determine the degree, what the chair indicated is absolutely correct, that it depends upon the age of the victim.
Senator Keel?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I guess this one just gives me a little bit of pause, along with the previous unclassified offense we were talking about, is it being a little bit disproportionate. Streaking in view of a high school is criminal and needs to be dealt with, and we need to be serious. But I'm not sure it's on par with the B felonies that we have on the books that involve potentially penetration of a minor. It's and the same deal with killing a child versus the Child Pornography Act. I think they're different classes, so there's a proportionality concern.
And did was your example a high schooler streaking?
No, streaking in view of a high school. So you'd know there
view of a high school.
You'd know there were young people, and that's criminal behavior. Take it seriously. Just a question of the level.
Okay, thank you.
Madam Chair?
Yes. Regina, please state your name for the record and give us your input on that.
Regina Largent, staff attorney for Senator Hughes, for Chair Hughes. I just wanted to add in response a little bit of distinction that we had on this one is that the second degree, just in terms of degrees, first off, the second degree indecent exposure involves the exposure of genitals. And when in this one where we remove the requirement for a prior, when there's an exposure of the genitals involving a sex act of masturbation, that was really the distinction here, that this is a sex act. A Class C felony, of course, is the lowest level felony. And the bump to a Class B is only in the case where you have a victim 15 or younger, where there's the sex act, which is not just the exposure of the genitals, or a prior conviction, so you have a repeat offender in front of children who is a danger to children or demonstrable danger to children. And that was just to get on the record what our reasoning was for the distinction there. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Largent. All right, Mr. Witt, continue, please.
Thank you, Madam Chair. The next two changes are found in Sections 14 and Section 17. However, I will note for the committee that Sections 14, 15, 16, 17, and 18 all deal with the crime of indecent viewing or production of a picture in one way or the other. And I will, while the reading the section can be a little bit difficult, I believe I found a way to explain it. However, further additional explanation is needed. I would ask that you call on Ms. Largent. But Section 14 amends AS 1161.123A for the crime of indecent viewing or production of a picture. Actually, the words production of a picture are added in place of the word photography, which is in current statute. And what Section 14 does is it removes the ability for the parent, minor and parent consent for a viewing or production of a picture. It specifies that a crime occurs any time that the person viewed or the picture produced is of someone under the age of 16. And it also specifies that someone 16 and over can give consent, but it is a crime if they do not give consent for the indecent viewing or production of a picture. I want to skip ahead to Section 17, and we'll fill in the rest of them here in a minute. Section 17, which is found on page 8, starting with line 10, also a little difficult to read, but I'll try to explain it, and maybe we can get confirmation. Section 17 amends AS 1161.123F to add classifications for the crimes of indecent viewing or production of a picture, and it lays out in this way. It is a Class B felony if it is of a minor. It is a Class C felony if it is a minor. It's a Class C felony if the minor is 16 or older. It is a Class A misdemeanor if it is of an adult. And then, in conjunction with those two sections, Section 15 has a carve out for law enforcement. Section 16 is a carve-out for surveillance system or crime prevention or prosecution, and Section 18 is a carve-out for lawful interaction with the child and physical or mental health reasons.
Senator Schauer.
This is probably for Mr. Skidmore or perhaps, but it's semantics on the language on it, but we had a note on Section 15 and 16 for that defense for those that were using this data for prevention or law enforcement activities. Should it be reproduction as opposed to production for all three of those cases where it says production, simply because they don't actually produce that material, they're reproducing the material for that? And would the semantics matter since they're not actually producing the material, they're only reproducing it for whatever, you know, like I said, law enforcement, preventive purposes, et cetera?
Mr. Skidmore?
So through the chair, this is John Skidmore. The answer to your question is no, I don't believe it matters. I would want to look up the definition of production to make sure I have this correct, but I believe production is any time the photograph is produced, that image is produced, whether it's the first time that you're making it or whether you are remaking it, you're still making it. And so every production would qualify. I hope that answers your question.
It does, Madam Chair. I just wanted to make sure there wasn't a loophole that, you know, some security officer in the mall somewhere does this and then they try to hang it on them, that the actual definition for the words could matter. So as long as we have the opinion and it's on the record that they're not going to be held accountable if it's re versus just production, I'm fine with it, but I wanted to make sure.
Okay. Thank you. Thank you for bringing that up.
Madam Chair?
Yes. Ms. Largent?
To the Chair, Regina Largent, if I may just give a brief recap on the classifications for indecent viewing or photography, just to make sure it's all four pieces of the grid are on the record. Viewing plus, with this CF, viewing plus with a minor is a Class C felony. Viewing of an adult is a Class A misdemeanor. Production of an adult is a Class C felony. And only production of a minor is a Class B felony.
Thank you.
That's it.
Were you done, Ms. Largent?
Yes, sir. Yes.
Mr. Witt, you want to continue, please?
Yeah, Madam Chair.
Oh, I'm sorry. We have a question. Senator Keel.
So I appreciate the follow-up on our conversation in previous meeting, committee hearing about consent and parents' consent and young kids. I'm glad to see that gone. How then does this treat, there's no consent under age 16 at all as I read this. How then does this treat 15-year-olds who are sending each other, God help us, naked selfies? I have a 14-year-old.
Mr. Witt?
Through the chair, the question directed to me.
Okay. Well, then, where are you going to answer it?
Hold on, Ms. Largent. I'm going to have Mr. Witt answer it, and then if you want to add, I'll give you a chance. Go ahead, Mr. Witt.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Through the chair, Senator Keel, that discussion was had in our office and with the Department of Law, and at one point we had been working on, Ms. Largent and the Department of Law had been working on a carve-out language specifically to make it so that we're not prosecuting minors for sharing explicit images with each other. However, after advice from the Department of Law and after discussing it, the chair decided that we were sending the wrong message if we put into law that it's okay for minors to share explicit images with each other. Is that the message that the committee wanted to send? Secondly to that, and I can let the Department of Law expound upon this, they don't prosecute that. If it is a consensual sharing of an image between two minors, and it is actually on the advice of a national association for missing and exploited children, that not be prosecuted and not be a crime. Secondly to that, it would be a juvenile crime. It would be something for juvenile justice to take up. If I got that all right, I hope I did. Maybe we can confirm that with Mr. Skidmore.
And Ms. Largent, do you have anything to add to that before we go to Mr. Skidmore?
No, that was well put. Thank you.
Mr. Skidmore?
Yes. If you're seeking confirmation from me, I would confirm that the conduct that Senator Keel has described is not something that we see referred to us, nor is it something that we would accept for prosecution if it were. And for juveniles, it would unlikely be referred to us per se. Instead, we go to DJJ. However, we did check with DJJ, and their statistics indicate to us that they see very, very few of these, and very few of them result in any action by them either. And when I say very few, I mean single digits.
Just Senator Keel?
Just so I understand, I appreciate the best practices. That's helpful to understand. What, as written, what level of offense would we not be pursuing?
This is John Skidmore again, through the chair, Senator Keel. The level of offense that would be evaluated for whether or not charges should be filed when it's a juvenile under the age of 16 would be at a Class C felony. But the elements that we would have to be evaluating include that it was a private exposure. And the definition of private exposure means exposing a person's body or part of the body in a place and under circumstances that the person reasonably believes would not result in the person's body or body part being viewed by the defendant or produced in a photo. So when a person takes the selfie and sends it, they can't have a reasonable expectation that the photo wasn't taken.
Madam Chair, excellent point. Thank you for catching me up on that.
Thank you. Senator Michiki.
Well, I think it's something we need to put more time into, maybe not today. But the fact is you don't know where the photos end up, and you don't know that they don't end up being used on a site of child porn, or at least photos of young people. I think they're not being much that any of the departments are doing, even when it's consensual underage. You're still sending the photo of an underage individual to another individual, and you don't know where it ends up. I mean, I certainly hope we're not ignoring it, and I hope it does end up with at least juvenile justice for correction, even when it's two people that think it's a really good idea to send photos to each other if they're underage. Do we have any comments about that from the department or from...
Well, Mr. Skidmore, is there anything, just to follow up and add to Senator Michiki's question, is there anything under the law that if photos are being taken and then and there's consent at that point just be shared between the two teenagers, and then one of the teenagers shares the person in the photo, the minor, beyond to a third person, is there something under the law that could be pursued with the juvenile justice? That's what it could be. Isn't that correct? And if it were to end up on a site, a child pornography site, there would be laws to cover that as well, would there not be?
Through the chair, to Senator Michiki as well as to the chair, there's sort of a two-phased answer to the questions that I'm hearing posed. The first is, again, the definition of private exposure. I want to go back and read it again. The words are very important. Private exposure means that a person has exposed the person's body or part of the body in a place and under circumstances that the person reasonably believed would not result in the person's body or body parts being viewed by the defendant. So let's take that hypothetical of one person sends photograph, person A sends it to person B. So is the defendant person B or is the defendant person C? Because if it's person C, person A didn't reasonably believe person C was going to be looking at this, only that person B was. So, yes, I believe the law does provide for the ability to prosecute when it is passed on beyond the original intended person. That's the first piece of the question. The second piece of the question is, if the photograph ends up being posted in some other location, would that qualify as child pornography? I would have to go back and reread the definitions of child pornography. I think it is possible that a photo could qualify. It is also possible that the photo would not qualify because there is the definition of child pornography doesn't mean every photo of somebody that is naked. It has to be something slightly more than that. So it would have to be based upon the facts of that particular case That's the second part of the answer. But the first part is passing it on to another person is not allowed and could result in criminal charges.
Senator Michikee?
Madam Chair, my concern here is the fact that sometimes kids are not very bright. And some of these photos are ending up in suicides and other very serious consequences because someone thinks they have a boyfriend that they're going to marry and have many children together, and they send him a photo, and he serves it to the hockey team. And it often destroys the life of the young person. I don't think it should be legal for minors to share photos. And I don't think 16 is an adequate age for giving consent. I think you should have to be an adult. So I don't think we're there yet on this. I think this is problematic, and I'm not going to hold the bill up or anything like that. I just think we have more work to do. I think it's a huge problem.
Mr. Skidmore, in the scenario Senator Michikee just described, sharing the photo with the hockey team, at that point it would be criminal, would it not, based on what you said earlier?
To the chair, my belief is that it would be, yes. When I read this definition of private exposure, it is very carefully crafted to say that the victim would have a reasonable belief that it would not be viewed by another. And that involves not only the person viewing it, but I think also that production. So that when we talked a moment ago about reproduction and passing things on, I think that that would also be covered under the statute. So I hope that answers the question.
Thank you, Senator Michikee.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I understand that. I guess the part that we're missing is if there are no consequences for the initial production of yourself and distribution to another young person, then you're sort of setting them up for failure. It's too late once the photo is out there. There has to be consequences for underage people taking. They should not, if they can't consent to sexual activity, they should not be able to consent to sexual photos, my view.
Madam Chair.
Just so I understand, so you're not talking, you're actually talking about you want it to be a crime before it gets shown to the hockey team.
Mm-hmm.
Is that correct? Okay, so, Mr. Witt.
Thank you. Thank you, Madam Chair. I wanted to point out to the committee, and we're going to get there, but in Section 34, where it is, say that the department shall, and this is and this is under Title 47, we've added language that might help answer the senator's question. In AS 4717-020E, and this is on page 22, starting with line 25 and going through page 23, line 9, we've added language that specific what might be considered criminal conduct, the department has to notify the nearest law enforcement agency if they see, and these are pointed out in 3A at the top of page 23, and it lists off a lot of statute numbers there. And those statute numbers refer to sending an explicit image of a minor, harassment in the first degree with contact over the clothing, harassment in the second degree specifically with photographs and pictures, indecent viewing or production of a picture, and distribution of indecent material to minors. And it also says at the bottom of 3A, including sex offenses committed by a minor against a minor, that when someone sees that within the department, they are to report that to the nearest law enforcement agency so that they can investigate and there could possibly be prosecution for that. I hope that kind of helps.
So I'm going to take an Eddie's. We're back on the record, and we've asked Casey Schroeder, Assistant Attorney General, to come up and explain, because my intention when we moved the language where we thought we were condoning behavior between teenagers taking naked photos of one another, we thought we were fixing it. There's a little bit of a gray area, and she is going to explain it and maybe discuss also again what would happen if an officer might encounter such a situation.
For the record, Casey Schroeder, Assistant Attorney General for the Criminal Division at the Department of Law. I think some of the confusion is coming from in Section 14, one of the changes that was made was that the age of consent was raised from 13 to 16 because previously the committee had some concerns with a parent consenting to the private exposure of an older child. So now, as subsection A in Section 14 reads, anyone under the age of 16 cannot consent to the private exposure. However, as Mr. Skidmore has pointed out, the private exposure means that a person has exposed a person's body parts under circumstances that the person reasonably believed would not result in the person's body or body parts being viewed by the defendant or produced in a picture. So that definition could imply that that somebody could potentially consent, because if you are not reasonably expecting somebody to view the body parts, that implies that perhaps you could reasonably expect somebody to view their body parts. So I think that that's causing some of the confusion. If the committee wanted to clarify, we could look at adjusting the private exposure to clarify that anyone under the age of 16, that the private exposure would not apply as far as them reasonably viewing, that they couldn't consent basically to somebody reasonably viewing their body parts. So if the committee wanted to do that, we could try to adjust that definition to try to clarify and make Section 14 and the definition of private exposure kind of work harmoniously, depending on the intent of the committee.
Because that was my intention, I thought that's what we were doing. I would support doing that. Senator Machicki, would that satisfy your concern?
It does. I would like to see what that adjustment looks like. I think that's the way to go. I mean, you still have the 16 to 18-year-olds, which are potentially slightly smarter about what they're doing to themselves, but one could argue perhaps not. So I don't know how we look at that, because we've essentially, so the age of consent in the state of Alaska is 16. Playing doctor is one thing. Sending a photo of playing doctor to someone else can have much more significant results. And I think I'd want to go higher on that for the photos because of that. They just don't get it. And like I said, we've read reports of many suicides because of that issue across the country, where they just don't think about the consequences.
And I also think if it's something the Department of Juvenile Justice can pin, it's a learning opportunity for that young person, so they can understand the ramifications if they were to continue that type of behavior after they're of age. So are there any other comments or questions regarding that? Thank you, Casey. Appreciate that. Mr. Witt, you want to continue, please?
Continuing, Section 19 is the next change. It was added a new paragraph. This was there was a document that was forwarded to members' offices earlier today. It was a letter from the Department of Public Safety's Forensics Laboratories team with a scientific definition of the word semen, and that has been placed into statute.
Madam Chair.
Senator Keel.
Just briefly, Madam Chair, I very much appreciate that memo. It's helpful. I'll encourage the sponsor of the Schneider Fix bill to put that in the record of his bill, too, because it answers some questions about why his bill, the language applies to semen in particular. And the fact that there is no laboratory test for vaginal secretions that could work the way seminal emissions do, I think it answers potentially an equal protection challenge. And so it's a very valuable letter to making sure that what we do works.
Thank you. Did you have any comments in that regard? Mr. Witt, continue, please.
Section 20, slight change. Section 20 was added by amendment. This is on page 9, lines 8 through 14, adding that there is a presumption of a protective order. Previous language had presumption of a protective order for any crime in this particular chapter. However, we were specifying that it was in the cases of domestic violence or sex crimes. That's since been fixed with the reference to AS 12-63-100 and AS 18-66-990. This was, of course, an amendment offered by Senator Keel. Section 21 amends AS 12-55-125I, and this starts, of course, on page 9, line 15, and it's a pretty long section. Goes all the way through page 12, line 23, and it does several things I will run through real quickly. AS 12-55-125I is a very large sentencing section of statute, and this adds conforming sentencing guidelines for the crimes of unlawful exploitation of a minor, indecent exposure in the first degree, sexual abuse of a minor in the third degree, and indecent viewing or production of a picture, as well as increasing presumptive ranges for distribution of child pornography. Presumptive sentencing ranges for unlawful exploitation of a minor, as described in Section 11, presumptive sentencing ranges for indecent exposure in the first degree, as described in Section 12 of this of the bill, presumptive sentencing ranges for sexual abuse of a minor in the third degree, as described in Sections 6 and 7 of the bill, and presumptive sentencing ranges for indecent viewing or production of a picture, as described in Sections 14 and 17 of the bill. And then separate from any other section of the bill, presumptive ranges increase for distribution of child pornography. And, Madam Chair, you might want to speak more about that.
I was actually reading something else when you said that. So what did you do? I'm sorry.
So on page 11, starting with line 12, this is actually a section that has been changed to specifically deal with child pornography. This was added to increase the presumptive ranges for the distribution and of child pornography, and I believe that you wanted to say something about that.
Yes, we were concerned, and that is something that looking at other states, too, we saw that we were quite lenient and probably inviting the wrong kind of people to participate in that in our state. We also realized that those that are involved in the actual production and developing the websites and things like that should be punished more harshly. And so that is part of what you see, receiving financial benefit from it. Very disturbing to know that our sentences were lenient and just seeking to toughen them up. And Ms. Largent worked on this quite a bit, and so I'd like to invite her perhaps to speak to this section, please. Ms. Largent?
To the Chair, Regina Largent. Thank you. One area on this that I think is particularly helpful to put on the record is Sergeant Dunford is still online. We met with him, and Senator Keel's staff and I met with him with the Department of Law, Department of Public Safety, and he really educated us on how the peer-to-peer networks work in these massive, like, distribution schemes. And if he is available and can get on the record kind of just a general information on how that works, I think that would be helpful for those down the line as you're considering how you're going to vote on this.
Okay. I am. Oh, Sergeant Dunford is online. Can you speak to this, Sergeant Dunford?
To the chair, yes, I can. Peer-to-peer networks work basically by computers sharing files with each other. There are other computers inside the network that have a table of contents, so to speak, of all of the files that exist in their areas. And if a person wants to find a particular file, they'll ask the table of contents, and it'll go out there and say, yeah, that particular file exists on the network in this location. And then that computer will make a direct connection with that other computer, and it will share the file from that computer to the other. There are other types of networks that share files in different ways, but basically that's how it works. The computers are all connected to each other. There are registration computers or a table of contents inside this network. Some computers that ask other computers what they have on them, what they're sharing, and that's how the networks basically work.
Sergeant Dunford, if there would be an accidental download of some sort, my understanding that an affirmative defense would cover that, but it's not accidental when we're actually sharing things from a folder on a person's computer. Is that correct? They would, in effect, really be a member of a what we could call perhaps a secret pedophile ring. Is that accurate?
Well, I was referring to a peer-to-peer network where computers are sharing files with each other. And you're talking about can someone, or your question is can someone, I'm sorry, this is to the chair. I apologize.
No problem.
The question is, the answer is, can you accidentally download? Yes, you can. You can search for something, say a music, and you download instead of music a video of explicit images or a child being sexually abused. If the person looks at something like this, deletes it immediately, notifies law enforcement, correct. There's an affirmative defense for that. The second part of your question?
Well, if they're sharing folders and they've opened up their folders to that, they're not. You can't do that accidentally. Is that correct? So they're part of a what I was referring to as a pedophile ring, if they're actively doing that. So you can't accidentally share photos that you have on your computer without knowing about it. Is that correct?
Okay, through the chair. The way the networks work, the reason why the folks download file sharing programs like this is so that they can receive and send files. The networks work efficiently by these computers, individual computers, sharing information. So if everybody gets on the network and they all decide just to receive information, there wouldn't be any information to be had because everybody would be trying to get some data and instead of sharing it. So the systems, when they're installed, are installed defaulted to receive and share the information that they get. If someone chooses to not share, the software automatically throttles their ability to receive. So it encourages sharing. When people download the programs in the user license agreement that they agree to, it states in there very clearly about the nature of the program and that it is a file sharing program and not just a file receiving program.
Okay, thank you. I just want to get the point that if, you know, sometimes something can accidentally show up that we're not going to, there's an out for these harsh penalties. And so that's, I just want to be clear. Also, we didn't really put on the record. I had to kind of understand what the dark web is. The sites are not registered. And so if I do a search for something, Google, it's not going to come up. I have to know the name of the website to type it in, and that's the dark web is the things that you can't just find unless you know the names. Senator Akeel.
Madam Chair, a question for the sergeant. These sharing programs, though, these are not the only way that people get these images. There are other places in the dark web to download them, other ways that people receive them. Is that correct?
Through the chair, Senator Keel, the answer to that question is yes. In fact, I'm looking at a study conducted in 2015 where 68,092 specific URLs, those are registered locations that you could navigate to, and 448 news groups contained child sexual abuse images. So that is very much correct.
So, Madam Chair, just to follow up by
Senator Keel,
I'm sorry to hear those numbers, but I support the approach here. Nobody should be doing this, but for those who do it, you don't have to help propagate it. So this language for those who help propagate it, I think, is appropriate.
Thank you, Senator Keel. Senator Michiki.
So that's – I wish I knew more about this, and it'd be interesting to hear the combination of what Mr. Skidmore and Mr. Dunford thought about this language, because it when you talked about – I mean, I'm glad I don't know about this, but the question I have is, am I on a – in my looking for I really like old Ford pickups. And sometimes I look for parts for old Ford pickups. So I go on some of these little sites, and is that similar to the kind of peer-to-peer network you're talking about, where I've put a couple photos of my 79 Ford, which is actually very sweet, on a couple of those sites on looking, so someone can tell me, yes, I have the headlight bezel for it. Is that what a peer-to-peer network is?
Mr. Witt?
Oh. Well, I actually...
Sergeant Dunford.
Through the chair, Senator Michiki, when you are on the internet using Google and you are asking for you're looking for a bevel on a headlight or something specific, the chances of getting to one of these URLs or these news groups is very, very slim. Most most people are familiar with when they're searching, they're looking at the search results, and they're clicking on the different search results. As you get deeper into a search result, say 15 or 16 pages in, things get less and less related. And so, you know, your chances of going to someplace you didn't intend to go are higher.
Allow Senator Michiki to rephrase his question, please.
What I'm asking is, do I use peer-to-peer networks in my – so I've joined this group that likes old trucks, and we send things back and forth. Is that the same peer-to-peer network that you're talking about with the distribution of – so I'm not worried about tripping on one of those sites. I'm asking if I am using the same type of technology with file sharing and where you register to be a part of the old truck parts sites. Is that the same thing that's being used by those that are sharing files of child porn?
Through the chair, Senator Michiki, no. That's not when you're going to a registered site, it is that's not technically part of the dark web. It's registered on one of the if you're able to register to it, if you're able to type an address and go to it, that is part of the registered network that we all see.
But is the basic structure, even though it's not on the dark web, is the basic structure, just so Senator Machicki understands, does it work kind of the same way, even though it's a legit above board network?
Through the chair, Senator Machicki, no. The peer-to-peer networks work differently in that the files that are shared from computer to computer. In your boards, the pictures are typically sent to the board or the web server where the blog or the forum is kept. It'll also allow, they can also allow you to send messages through the forum or through the board and or through email, all of which are, they are not the peer-to-peer network that I'm referring to, which is all dark web activity.
Senator Machicki.
So that's kind of what I was looking for. It clarifies for me. If I'm on one of these sites, I'm actively engaged with multi-party sharing and very interested in receiving or distributing child porn. This isn't in any way, shape, or form an accidental thing or a first-timer. This is a guy, this is a person that's out for this kind of material.
Absolutely. Okay. In our investigations, through the chair, Senator Machicki, absolutely. When we conduct these investigations, a lot of the evidence that supports the fact that these images are on a particular computer indicates the exact facts that you spelled out, is that people are purposely looking for these types of things. We find artifacts or evidence of this in their web browser history, in this website that they sign up for. The evidence isn't just an image on a computer. It's all of the things that support the fact that the person has an interest in sexually abused children.
Thank you, Sergeant. Mr. Witt, continue, please.
Thank you, Madam Chair. On section 22, it's a large section. The change is found on page 14, lines 18 through 21. This goes to the question that Senator Schauer had earlier. This section amends AS 1255-145A to add a new subsection to specify that for the purposes of considering prior sentences when imposing a sentence of imprisonment, a crime occurring in another state that's similar to a crime in the state of Alaska is considered a prior conviction. Section 24 is the next change. This is found on page 15. Section 24, this was changed by amendment in a previous hearing. This amends 1255-185-16 to add sexual abuse of a minor in the third degree if the victim is at least 6 years younger than the offender and indecent viewing or production of a picture to the definition of sexual felony. I will say that there is a forthcoming amendment to basically what the amendment will do. We'll say, starting on line 19, sexual abuse of a minor in the third degree, and then it will reference back to 1841-438, where we specify that the victim is at least 6 years younger than the offender. It's just a technical one, cleans up the language. Section 25, this was a change that was made by amendment as well in a previous previous hearing. This was an amendment by Senator Keel and then a second amendment by Senator Vice Chair Reinbold. This adds a new subsection directing the Department of Corrections to include in the victim notification system that victims of domestic violence or sexual offenses do have the right and can secure the right to a protective order or can secure a protective order. And then Senator Reinbold's amendment added that certain state victim resources be made available to those victims. And that is on page 15, lines 26, page 15, line, pardon me, line 26 through page 16, line 5. The next change is found in section 31. This is on page 21. In this section, we had some cleanup language to this section was previously discussed, directing the Attorney General in conjunction or in consultation with public safety to develop certain tools to track sex offenses in the state. We just had some cleanup language there that was done. The language we had initially asked to be included wasn't followed accurately, and so this cleans that up a little bit. No substantive changes to the section. Section 32, much the same thing. This section was done by amendment the last time that the committee considered the bill, and then the amendment was actually conceptually amended at the meeting, and that conceptual amendment to the amendment was also included in this. That conceptual amendment offered by Senator Machicki cleans up the four subsections for the gathering of data and reporting of data.
Mr. Witt, the sections 31 and 32, was that initially brought forward to us by STAR? I seem to recall that. Do you know?
No, to the chair, yes, that's correct.
Thank you.
For the record, STAR is an acronym that stands for Standing Together Against Rape.
Thank you.
Section 33, this amends Title 47 and the duty to report provision that if the harm appears to be the result of suspected sex offense, that the department or the person who works in the subset here shall immediately report the harm to the nearest law enforcement agency. There will be an amendment to change the word "and" in line 7 to "or," so that the person who is reporting can make the determination whether through the training that we talk about later, they identify this as a suspected sex offense, that they have the option to go directly to law enforcement and don't have to report to two different entities.
So we're giving them a choice. I thought we were going to require them, if they suspected a sexual crime, to call law enforcement.
Chair Hughes, I could speak to that if you'd like.
Ms. Largent?
You're correct, Chair Hughes, that the intent when we submitted this language was that if the suspected abuse was of a sexual nature, that the reporter shall call law enforcement. However, the language in the CS included an "and" instead, so it's not that we're giving them a choice. It's that if it's the regular, you know, suspected child abuse, they still follow current procedure to call the department or law enforcement. Current statutes allow them; they can also call a local peace officer under current statutes. We're just here. The language here is to require that if it's sexual abuse that is suspected, that is immediately to law enforcement.
And Ms. Largent, so if they make the call to law enforcement, they do not also need to make the call to OCS. Is that correct?
That is correct. The "and" here was a drafting error.
Okay. Thank you. And I just want to say one of the reasons why we thought this was important is we've had incidents in schools where we want that phone call to go straight to the law enforcement officer. We don't want it just going to a principal or to OCS. We feel like these are serious crimes, and the mandatory reporters need to know. They need to contact law enforcement.
Madam Chair.
Mr. Witt.
Chair Hughes.
Mr. Witt.
Thank you, Madam Chair. You caught me off guard. This provision doesn't change the word in line 6 that says "shall" immediately. So the person shall immediately report, but if there's a suspicion that is a sex offense, they shall immediately report to law enforcement.
Thank you. Ms. Largent, and then Ms. Senator Machicki.
I will add that this is actually not a substantial change in practice, because, like I've already mentioned, that reports of neglect or abuse currently can be made either to DHSS or to local peace officer. And also, currently, mandatory reporters that are involved in film, photographs, or internet service providers, they are also mandatory reporters, and when they see evidence of sexual exploitation of children, sexual abuse of children in film or internet, they are required to immediately report that to nearest law enforcement. So we're effectively bringing other sexual abuse of children reports in line with that requirement. Thank you.
And I'll just read those quickly. That not only will they report to law enforcement, but it will also include sending explicit images of a minor, harassment in the first degree, sexual harassment in the second degree, sexual indecent viewing or photography, distribution of indecent material to a minor. Senator Michicki.
Madam Chair, I support the amendment the way it is. I think it's really important that sometimes people are not going to report to law enforcement in different parts of the state. That's less likely, and at least you would have some reporting done if they chose not to go to the next level. And we have unfortunately have evidence of that on very recent cases. Madam Chair, Peter Miller raped babies for 30 years, and I just don't know that you're going to get reports. I prefer leaving it in there. If someone has any doubt, they're going to already have made a report to the department. Yet, if they do suspect sex, it being a sex offense, they'll report to law enforcement as well. But I don't see any harm in the end, Madam Chair. I think it increases the probability that a report is going to make it to the right people.
Okay, thank you. Senator Schauer.
I'm just curious on the where it says department, it leaves off. It's probably defined in statute, but where it says immediately report harm to the nearest office of the department, and who is that department? Is it meant to be departments, any of them? Were they specified? And like I said, it may be in statute, but does anybody know what that is?
HSS.
Is it just
HSS? It's Department of Health and Social Services, where Office of Children's Services is located.
So that's defined in statute already, so just when it says department, is that okay?
Yeah, through the chair. Senator Schauer, that's correct.
Got it. Thanks.
Madam Chair.
Senator Keel.
I guess if Ms. Norberg is with us, is it worth hearing from the department about the shift in approach and the difference in approach between law enforcement response and OCS response?
Yes. If she could please come up. And I'm trying to remember. Oh, Natalie Norberg. And I will say, when we had the end, we got some concern from the department that it was would be requiring double reporting. So,
Madam Chair, please. For the record, my name is Natalie Norberg, and I'm the Office of Children's Services Director. I think initially the department did have some concern about double reporting, but I think I share Senator Michicci's concern at this point that I think it would be better to have both ways to report, because in the last several years, the Office of Children's Services has centralized our reporting system. We have a statewide hotline, and since we have implemented that, we've actually seen an increase in the number of reports, and so it really shows that if you have a centralized way and all reporters know what the process is, and it's very simple and straightforward, and you don't have to like figure out a different phone number every time you want to make a report, that it's very effective in capturing the numbers. It's effective in capturing the information that we want to collect. And then we're concerned that if mandated reporters may be calling from different jurisdictions on children, because we know that, you know, children travel all over the state, they might be seen by a provider in a different part of the state from where they're from. Figuring out who to call in that law enforcement jurisdiction may be confusing, and it may result in fewer reports happening. So in my opinion, it would be better to have over-reporting of this important issue than the concern of not having reports made at all.
Of possible underreporting. Okay, so you prefer the word "and," as does Senator Michicki. All right, we kind of moved into the amendment there, but I think we took care of that. Senator Keel.
I guess two calls is one approach we could take. I guess my question was: Are there situations where there's a report of harm and law enforcement doesn't get called? are the situations where there's a call to law enforcement and OCS doesn't get called? Do we need to notify you both, or are you always going to contact each other?
Through the chair, Senator Keel, there are times when different the department or the law enforcement are called separately. Oftentimes, though, I mean, there is a very clear process in statute and in our practice for if the Office of Children's Services receives a report and there's clearly, if there's sexual abuse, medical issue, or some other reason where we identify that the child's abuser is outside of the family, we'll automatically notify law enforcement. We don't always see the other way around, because if law enforcement receives a report and it has nothing to do with the if the victim is not related to the perpetrator, the Office of Children's Services would not be notified.
Ms. Norberg, is the centralized call-in, is it manned 24/7?
Madam Chair, at this point, it is not manned 24/7. It's manned approximately 14 hours a day, so two shifts. And we are working on getting it completely funded through, I mean, excuse me, not funded, but manned 24/7.
Okay. I think that's an important reason to have the call to law enforcement. Sometimes the collection of evidence, there's a window of time for that. Senator Michiki, did...
Well, I'll just tell you, since the recent case, I've been doing a lot of research, and here's the danger you have. Some parts of the state, local law enforcement do not actively pursue certain cases. And if there's double reporting, the agency is absolutely going to make sure that it gets to the proper place. I mean, I just strongly support the double reporting. We have very different parts of our state that behave very differently. And it's our job to make sure that everyone is treated the same. And this will help to make that make it more likely for that to occur.
Thank you, Senator Michiki. So not only will we, if we leave the word and, will increase the chance of reporting, but also that there will be a response to that report. And I believe we did come up with the amendment, which we haven't got to. It looks like we may withdraw it unless one of my members tells me they want it. But we developed it because your concern about double reporting. So now that you have withdrawn that concern, I am satisfied with leaving the word and. And it looks like I'm not hearing any objection to that at this point. Senator Keel?
Not, Madam Chair, not an objection. I guess one more question for Ms. Norberg. That with and, your department will start receiving calls about unrelated folks who commit sex crimes against children or suspected sex offenses against children on the regular. So will there be a way for you to make your staff to make sure that law enforcement is hearing from you? Will those get round filed? I mean, how are you going to handle that increase in call volume, and what would be the approach?
Senator Keel, through the chair, I don't know. I may not be understanding your question. I think the way the law is written currently, we will continue to receive all reports as we currently are. Any kind of abuse on a child related, regardless if a parent or a non-parent or a caregiver is the perpetrator of that abuse, comes to the Office of Children's Services. And we have dedicated, trained, skilled staff to speak to that reporter. The reporters are trained to not make decisions on their own. If it involves abuse of a child, call. You don't need to discern whether or not, you know, who the perpetrator is or do your own investigation or any of that. So I believe we'll still continue to get all reports, and then this will require the additional reporting if it's related to a sexual abuse crime to law enforcement. Does that answer your question?
Thank you.
And for clarity, there was quite a list of sexual crimes that were already required under the mandatory reporting to be called into the centralized calling center. And we just added some that were not included in the list, and then added the law enforcement contact as well. So are there any more questions or comments on that? Thank you very much, Ms. Nordberg. We thank you for being here. Mr. Witt, can we finish up here? We're getting close.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I just whispered for Ms. Nordberg to stick around because there's more
for her department. Thank you.
Madam Chair, if the amendment for Section 33 is not going to be offered, then there would need to be an amendment for Section 35, which is where I'm skipping ahead to. Section 35 was conforming language. There is an or a law enforcement agency in this section, and that would need to be amended to and in this section in order for it to now conform to Section 33.
Okay. Perhaps we'll let Senator Michicki make that conceptual amendment when we get through this then.
Section 36. In Section 36, it amends for conforming language, again for Section 33, to add training related to requirements for reporting a suspected sex offense under AS 4717020. There will be an amendment offered to remove the words "in service" from this section. After discussions with the department, there are, and Ms. Norberg can speak to this additionally, but my understanding is there are resources available and that are more efficient in providing that training. In-service carries the connotation that is a face-to-face, in-person training, which could be, I wouldn't say cost prohibitive, but more financially efficient ways to provide the training that is being requested of the department here, and I'll let Ms. Nordberg expand upon that.
Ms. Nordberg?
Thank you. Currently, we offer mandated reporter training through an online training module, which is easily, we can easily update that and add, new language and new training components. And we feel that it would be as Mr. Witt shared, it would be far more efficient for us to be able to offer that training online versus an annual in-person training to staff. And keep in mind, this is only for department staff and school district employees. So if we create this training that's available to all mandated reporters electronically, it'll definitely have a wider impact.
Is your electronic training, is it used by the school districts?
Yes, it is.
Okay, thank you. So if you update it, then they will have the information they need.
I think they have the access to our training. Some districts may use their own, but we do offer our training. It's available online through our department website.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you, Madam Chair. That was Section 36. Section 37 adds a new paragraph for the definition of sex offense. Refers back to the meaning given in AS 1263-100. This is for, you have to include that in the Title 47 provisions. Section 39 starts on page 23, line 29, and goes through page 24, line 28. This is updates the applicability section to conform with the changes in the bill. And Section 40 is the last additional section, and this was done by amendment by request through the chair's office. This adds a section so that the Department of Law and the Department of Public Safety can adopt necessary regulations for the implementations of Section 31 and 32. Those are related to the two departments working together to develop tools and mechanisms for reporting data related to sex offenses in the state. And Madam Chair, that concludes the explanation of changes.
All right. Are there any? There is. Senator Keel.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I know that the public defender was not able to be on the line at the beginning of our hearing. I was interested in the changes in Section 2 and 3 of the bill, the change in mental state for sexual abuse and sexual assault in the second and the third degree, and wonder if he has been able to join us and could take questions about those two changes and at the top of the bill.
I am not seeing anyone that has been added here. to our roster, so, and he's not, we don't have anyone in the room, so I'm sorry.
Okay.
Okay. Are there any other questions or comments from members?
Senator
Machicki?
I don't believe we need to change Section 35. The section ends as required under A of this section, which means one agency, both agencies, or so as long as you're satisfying the requirement of A, it would be the obligation to make the report to the department or a law enforcement agency. I don't think it needs to be changed. We can ask the Department of Law if they disagree with that.
Mr. Skidmore?
Madam Chair, I'm still here. I'm sorry. Which was the section that Senator Machicki was asking about?
Section 35. We had a discussion that that may need to be, the or may need to be changed to and on line 14. Senator Machicki, you want to repeat?
Yeah, so if you look at the section it's referring to, which is A of that section, where we preferred that and remains, and then they discussed that, Mr. Witt discussed that perhaps it needed to be changed in Section 35, but the as required under A of this section seems to be adequate, that it may be a report to the department or a law enforcement agency. Could you advise us if you believe that needs to be changed, or it seems adequate the way it is?
So through the chair, Senator Machicki, whether you use an or an and depends upon the committee's intent. By having an or, it allows the mandatory reporter to report either to a department or to a law enforcement agency. But if you were to use an and in that location, it would require them to report both to the department and the law enforcement agency. And so it's really dependent upon what the committee's intent is with that section.
Mr. Skidmore, can you look back in Section 33? Mm-hmm. Because that it says, and if the harm appears to be a result of suspected sex offense, shall me report the harm to the nearest law enforcement. So we just want to make sure that if we have and in Section 33, in your opinion, is leaving or in Section 35, will that work?
So, Madam Chair, forgive me. I'm just pausing for a moment. Those two seem to be inconsistent to me, where it is required to be reported to both under Section 33 at line 7 and one or the other in line 14 on page 23. So my initial reaction is it should be consistent.
Senator Machicki, would you like to explain how you were?
Mr. Skidmore, Section 33 is an and or an or. It only becomes an and if there's a suspected sex offense. Section 35 refers you to the requirements under A. So the way I read it is the department or a law enforcement agency as required under A, that or would be correct and not and. And would counter Section 33 or does not counter Section 33. But you're an attorney and I'm not. So I'm interested in your perspective explained that way.
Through the chair, Senator Machicki, I appreciate that, and I'm unfortunately going to give you a very lawyerly answer, which is I would need more time to review that to figure out how those two worked together. I apologize that I can't do that on the spot, but it's a little confusing to me, and I have to confess that my attention was focused mostly on those sections that dealt with new crimes. This was not a section that I paid close attention to in my review up until now. So I'm not prepared to give you that interpretation on the fly. I would need to spend some time thinking about it and probably been looking at some grammar books.
Mr. Witt?
Madam Chair, if you would please invite Ms. Norberg up, she can explain how these two sections work in conjunction with each other, and maybe that would help explain if they need to match or not.
Ms. Norberg, please join us at the table and state your name again for the record.
Madam Chair, my name is Natalie Norberg. I'm with the Office of Children's Services. I believe the language needs to change to "and a law enforcement agency as required under A of this section," or it could just be, yeah, I think that would be the simplest at this point.
Okay, thank you. Senator Michicki.
Section A does not require a report to law enforcement under the first half. It's only if sexual assault occurs. So an and would require both no matter what. And that would cause these two sections to conflict. What you could do, we're amending on the fly, Madam Chair. Since we have another section to evaluate, this just should be one we probably spend a few minutes on offline, perhaps.
Okay, that sounds and Mr. Skidmore, your lawyerly need more time. We would like you to consider that and consider Ms. Norberg. Thank you for your testimony, and we are bringing this back up Monday, so this we can fix that and or if we need to on Monday. So, with that, are there any other questions or comments regarding the committee substitutes?
Just one, Madam Chair.
Senator Schauer.
And I apologize. I missed it. It's for, I believe, Mr. Skidmore. It's back to Section 5, and I'll give you a second if you want to pull it up real quick. I think it's a very simple question, but I want to make sure I understand the intent of it. Let me know when you're back there.
Through the Chair, Senator Schauer, go ahead.
Okay. It's on Section 5. It's amended to read, and it's got, you know, it is a defense to a crime charged under that, you know, et cetera. What I'm curious is, does that mean that just having the paperwork means the violation is okay? In other words, if somebody is trying to file that, but they say, I've got paperwork in hand, is that a valid defense for them in that case? Or does it have to be more to it?
So you're... Through the Chair, Senator Schauer, if I understand your question correctly, we're addressing the marriage defense, and you're asking if they simply have to have the piece of paper to show that they're married and not having filed for a separation, divorce, or dissolution, is that enough to be a complete defense? Is that the question?
Kind of really talking about it's neither party has filed with the court for separation. So in other words, if they have filed for it, does that make it okay? It's the filed part I'm asking to specify.
Through the Chair, Senator Schauer, thank you for that clarification. The filing does not allow it to operate as a defense. The rationale for that being that once one party has filed for one of those results for a marriage, a change in the marriage status, once you filed for that, that makes the folks in a contentious situation, and the defense was only being allowed for those situations in which two parties were clearly wanting to be together. The defense applies to those circumstances in which one is a law enforcement officer or an officer at the Department of Corrections or a probation officer or a juvenile probation officer. So it's dealing in a situation in which the state would normally say sexual activity between this person and somebody in their care is not acceptable. The one way in which it does become somehow acceptable is because they are married, and that we wouldn't want to interfere with marital relations in those situations. But the filing for dissolution, divorce, or separation means that those parties are most likely no longer interested in having the same type of relationship. So I guess the short answer is filing does change the fact that this defense would no longer apply.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, thank you. So I'm not seeing any further questions or comments, so I'm going to remove my objection. Are there any further objections at this point to adopting the committee substitute? Seeing none, the committee substitute for Senate Bill 35 has been adopted. I was almost going to say has finally been adopted. And so we have a couple of amendments. I know Senator Keel has a meeting to attend, so we thank you. Brief at ease. We are going to hold off. We did have an amendment we could have done, but we're going to wait since we have some other ones to do. So we'll hold those off until Monday, and obviously holding the bill as well. I did want to point out, just because there was a rally at noon in this was Wear Blue Day, National Prevention of Child Abuse Month, and I thought it was significant that we were bringing this bill back and putting it on the table, which does pertain to protecting our children in the state from sexual abuse. So I just thought that was significant. I also want to point out again that we will hold public testimony on this bill on Monday afternoon, and we'll take up the amendments, and then we will open public testimony, and then we will hopefully, if it's the will of the committee, move it out. And then we will take up Senate Joint Resolution 5, Constitutional Amendment, Permanent Fund and Dividend, a constitutional amendment sponsored by the governor. And that evening we will have on SJR 5 public testimony at 6 p.m. And seeing no other business before the committee, we are adjourned. Let the record reflect the time is 3:26.